I already was preaching once we canceled Eric, but and so I was thinking about what I wanted to talk about because I hadn't really been planning to do anything. But I had been thinking about something for a while, and it goes along with the idea of grief that I have been talking about last couple of weeks. Obviously, I've been in it now for a good year and plus, in different stages of it with Julie's Julie's cancer returning and then ultimately her passing away or going to sleep in Christ, as Paul would have put it. And so dealing with that grief, I now read through scriptures in a way that I see it in places I never saw it before. I even think, for example, I suspect the apostles needed a bunch of time after his resurrection, not only to be taught by him from a number of moments that he appeared to them. He didn't spend, you know, a month with them every day and every hour. He just appeared to them a handful of times. But I suspect moving on and preaching the gospel without him there, the person they had spent 3 years with learning, their master, was something that had a bit of grief attached to it. There was some learning to press on and move on and get on it. Now, they were, having seen him resurrected, they knew he was alive, but still he wasn't with them anymore. And sometimes, and this leads into this issue that I think has hit most of the world in the last couple years, that sometimes grief isn't just losing somebody. It's also sometimes when life doesn't work out the way we expected. How many people graduating college or high school last year didn't expect their school to go that way or their graduation to go that way, who are disappointed and felt like they've been robbed of something they'll never be able to do again? They'll never get it back. The one-time shot. And it was taken away because of COVID. And that can cause a lot of grief. Because grief in scriptures, I talked about it a couple weeks ago, or a few weeks, whatever it's been. Grief actually, especially in the Bible, is used in three ways. It's used spiritually about sin, about what we are, how we respond appropriately when we have sinned. Do we grieve as God grieves over our sin? But it also talks about emotions, being saddened. And we see that, obviously, with Job and him losing all of his children, losing all of his family, losing all of his, you know, his things. We can see the grief that he endures and suffers. One of the great, really, examples in scriptures of it. But there are a number of others. But the other one is mentally. We also grieve sometimes mentally when things we expect to happen don't happen. When things that we wanted to happen will never happen. You know, somebody who was planning to get married, have a baby, and they find out, I can't have children. What happens? They grieve, right? And then now that grief leads to sadness, and it leads to all the kind of emotions of grief. But it starts with a mental thing. You didn't lose something. You didn't have anything yet. But everything you expected has been pulled away. And in the last couple of years, I do think most of the world has been suffering from grief because we kind of think, well, this shouldn't happen anymore. Our healthcare systems are so good, we can just kind of make sure we don't get sick and we don't die. And well, we kind of learned that's not really true. It's never been true, but we often put so much expectations upon medical treatments that we think bad stuff won't happen to us. But that's not true. Never been true. We keep more children alive than we ever have, but people die. Young, old, middle age. I mean, some of the best young men I've ever known, Don here in our group many years ago, many of you don't know Don Buzga, but didn't make it really through college before, brain cancer got to him. Cameron Bauman, a couple of nicest young men I've ever known. And I actually knew them quite well and spent, you know, quite a bit of time with them, even outside of church and doing things with them. And neither one of them, you know, made it to 25. And so you think about that, and those are hard, and all the family, and think, this is around us, and there's no way to prevent all of that. And the lessons are for us not to get so distracted or torn down by all of these losses, but in the house of mourning that God tells us to go to because we learn some lessons, he also wants us to know that there's hope that cannot be taken away by anything that can happen here. And that hope for us as Christians is where we must live regardless of circumstances. And these circumstances in the last, you know, couple of years have been challenging for sure. And numbers of people have suffered. And many of us probably know people and know people who have passed away from this or other things. And in many ways, I didn't feel the grief of the pandemic because early on in the pandemic, my wife's cancer was back near her brain. And we knew she didn't have a long time. And there wasn't anything we were ever going to do about that. And so I really couldn't grieve. I didn't have much in terms of the pandemic. It didn't affect me. It's not like it didn't affect me, but it didn't affect me like my wife, right? And so it was like, I don't care about that. It's so minor in comparison to my wife that I can't even really, it doesn't even, you know, hit a blip on my, you know, life scale. And so, but the mental thing, and looking back at it over the last month, I've kind of understood, especially in this recent kind of spike, how much, and how much arguing and how much anger there is amongst people and how people look at it differently and get upset about different things. And I think all of that is somewhat attained, or I should say some of that is explained by the grief that everybody's going through, that life isn't what they expected it to be, that we want our regular life back. And how often do you hear people say that? I want it to be normal again. Well, maybe it's never normal again, because very often things have happened throughout human history that have changed the trajectory of life for people in a nation, around the world. And, you know, we are probably our grandparents or great-grandparents, for some of us, endured that 100 years ago with the Spanish flu that killed I didn't know this, you know, until last year, killed more people than World War I of our own soldiers. More of them died from Spanish flu than died in battle. I mean, we sent them off, these young men, in boats across the Atlantic, and a lot of them didn't make it to the other side of the Atlantic because of the Spanish flu. And so they endured it, they overcame it, they pressed on. As I talked about last week, pressing on, there becomes a time when, boy, the circumstances have changed, everything's different, we're saddened, we're grieving over it, we're grieving over what we expected, what we wanted, what we lost, but then we have to keep going. What does keeping going look like? Sometimes it doesn't look better than it was. Sometimes it's just we keep going. And so I want to talk about a couple of passages in the book of Hebrews that really, I think, help us understand this concept of this mental place that all of us as God's followers want to get to. And that is, how do we press on even in the midst of difficulties? We can do that because of the hope. And I titled really the lesson, Looking for a City, because that's kind of the theme of Hebrews 11. Hebrews 11 is sometimes referred to by people as kind of the Hall of Fame of Faith, all these faithful people. But that's not really the theme of the chapter. The theme of the chapter are all of these people who endured such great difficulties because of their faith, but who were looking for a city whose designer and builder was God. That's what allowed all of them to endure their trials. And so when we look at this, I'm just going to, and I probably just want to read here through the first 10 verses of chapter 11 to get kind of the basics concept of it. It says, "Now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen, for by it the people of old received their commendation. By faith we understand that the universe was created by the word of God, so that what is seen was not made out of things that are visible. By faith Abel offered to God a more acceptable sacrifice than Cain, through which he was commended as righteous, God commending him by accepting his gifts, and through his faith, though he died, he still speaks." You know, that little prayer, parenthetical moment, though he died. He was killed by his brother because of his faith. It's a little side note, but he's saying, why is that a side note? Because his brother didn't take away his hope or his glory or his faith. He received all that God intended for him, in spite of his brother killing him much too early in his life. And then you go on, he says, by faith Enoch was taken up so that he should not see death, and he was not found because God had taken him. Now before he was taken, he was commended as having pleased God. And without faith it is impossible to please him, for whoever would draw near to God must believe that he exists, that he rewards those who seek him. And he says, by faith, Noah, being warned by God concerning events as yet unseen, in reverent fear constructed an ark for the saving of his household. By this he condemned the world, became an heir of the righteousness that comes by faith. We don't often think about it, but I look at the example of Noah, and this is where I'd say sometimes I see now, I wonder about people grieving in scriptures that I didn't think about before. So I see Noah, and you know, he comes out of the ark. He builds the ark. He, you know, God saves him in the ark. His family comes out of it after a year, you know. And then the first story we essentially get after that is he's drunk. Why? Probably didn't have that problem for, you know, a year plus. Do you wonder how difficult it might have been for Noah, who's probably, how many of his siblings, how many did his parents, did his father die in the flood? Did his grandfather die in the flood? It appears his grandfather died in the flood, by the way, according to the lineage given in Genesis. Whose name, by the way, we'll skip that. But the idea of coming into this world without anybody, how hard would that have been for Noah? How difficult would it have been? Maybe a little easier for his kids, I'm not sure. But for his wife, how hard would that have been? Yeah, you're living and you're alive, but everybody you knew is gone. So, and you're starting over. You're rebuilding. And so the difficulties that they had to endure to demonstrate faith is sometimes, we sometimes don't think about that. In order to really demonstrate faith, we're going to have to endure difficulties. Otherwise, we're just living and thinking we're going to live and be blessed all the time. And that isn't, God didn't promise that to anybody who lives on this planet. Even his own children and disciples. He's like, that's not what you're going to have. We can have his peace, as Jesus said, but in this world, we're going to have trouble, as Jesus told them. And so, you move on, and he says, by faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive it as an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. How hard is it for you sometimes I want you to go and start doing it. Like, well, yeah, but what, where am I going? What am I doing? We want all the details, right? How hard is it for you to simply be told to start doing something without knowing the end and all the plan? How hard is it for you to do that? A lot of us probably struggle with that, right? We kind of want to know all the details. He didn't know any of the details. And do you know this? The city that he was called from and sent out from, there, it's been excavated. They have seen, I mean, ancient, 4,000 years ago, homes built with kind of center courtyards that had like 2,000 square feet of living space in them. It was a city. He didn't live in a city after he left there. He was a nomad living in tents with a lot of animals. That may not have been the life he grew up with, but it may have been the life that God sent him off to. That may have been quite different than what he grew up with, and maybe even anything he'd ever experienced before. But he obeyed it, and he went out. And it wasn't without its cost. And so he went out, not knowing where he's going. By faith, he went to live in a land of promise, as in a foreign land. So the land that is called the Promised Land, he lived as a foreigner, given to him and his descendants. But he said, God said, you're not going to get to do that. That will be for your children. He said, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. He mentions the living in tents, doesn't he? Probably something he hadn't grown up with. And so he says, for he was looking forward to the city that has foundations, whose designer and builder is God. That's really the key. Abraham, the great example of faith, is the one who did everything God asked, not understanding where he was going, not understanding where it was leading, but he did it all and got through it all and endured it all because he wasn't looking for the city of Ur. He wasn't looking for the city, of Jerusalem. He was looking, well, we might say, the new Jerusalem that comes down out of heaven. He was looking for the city whose designer and builder was God, not any human being. And so he was able to keep pressing on through all the trials, through all the difficulties, through all the temptations. And there were many, a number of them recorded. I'm sure he had many more that we don't see recorded in Genesis. But he endured them and pressed on and overcame with God's help because he was looking forward to that city. And sometimes in order to press on, we have to have that mindset. In order to keep going through the difficulties, we have to have that mind that says, I'm looking for that city. That's my goal. That's my hope. That's where I'm going. And everything here is really just a pilgrimage. It's just a little trip on the greater trip leading to God's eternal kingdom. In Hebrews 13, and so he can kind of go through a lot of that, but I want to kind of hit at kind of the last part of what the author writes about in terms of leading us to that kind of mindset in place of just pressing on and doing and being God's people in the midst of difficulties. And so it starts in verse 7. It might be a weird place because a lot of times we read these passages, read verse 7. It says, remember your leaders, those who spoke to you the word of God. And that passage often used about, with 17, about obeying your leaders and submitting to them. But in this verse, he said, remember your leaders, those who spoke to you, taught you. And why do you do that? Because why do you look to those who are leading? Because we're following, right? We're trying to follow. And there isn't any greater leader than obviously Jesus. But then Jesus and the apostles and the prophets and all of the teachers and preachers and elders who have gone throughout time since then have been leaders for people. And he's urging us to kind of remember them. And he says, consider the outcome of their way of life. Watch where they're going. Watch how they're acting. Watch what they're doing. And he says, you need to imitate their faith. Why do we, and many of these leaders were older, right? Why do we look to older people? Because I know for those of us who are older, this couple of years of the pandemic is kind of unusual, but it probably hasn't been the worst years of our life. If you've been around a while, you've probably lived through some difficulties, you know, a lot of them in the 60s and 70s, and there are a lot of difficult times going back through life in the last 60 years or so. And if you've lived longer, you've seen more. It was hard. Been hard on a lot of people. When you've lived long enough, you've seen a lot of those hard things. And when we're younger, sometimes we don't know how to press on as well. Sometimes as those who have older, because they've learned how to do that. And so he's telling us to remember them and imitate them. And then he says, Jesus Christ is the same yesterday and today and forever. What's he saying? Because, you know, we're talking about all of these from chapter 11 through 12 when he's telling us to keep running our race, because that's where he moves from 11 into 12. We've got to run our race, and we're not done until we pass that goal. And that's until we pass the finish line, so we can get the prize. We're not done. And so that's what he's talking about. That's what he's discussing. And in chapter 12, you know, not only talking about that race, but understanding the discipline it takes, and then also realizing that we're part of a kingdom that can't be destroyed. The foundations of this city of God cannot be removed. Nothing can happen to it. Nothing will happen to it. And so he says, and he comes into 13, and he's telling us to continue in brotherly love, continue in doing those things that please God, which we see at the beginning of chapter 11, right, that Enoch did. And he says, and at the end of this, he's going to remember your leaders, imitate their faith. Jesus is the same today and yesterday and forever. Well, a lot of the people he was writing to were feeling discouraged because becoming a Christian had, for those Jewish Christians, it hadn't turned out the way they expected. They were being persecuted and life wasn't better. They weren't like all in their glory yet. And so the book really focuses on helping Jewish Christians overcome the difficulties of becoming Christians in this world and pressing on to that city of God that isn't in this world, but that is in God's heaven. And so he's telling them, Jesus hasn't changed. Doesn't matter how difficult it gets. Jesus is still here and he's still with us. And he says, do not be led away by diverse and strange teachings. So don't be, he says really, you know, multivaried teachings and when he says strange, he simply means not God's. That's what he's referring to. And he says, and a lot of different ones, right? There's a lot of different teachings out there. A lot of different thoughts about everything out there. And, you know, in social media land now, we have even more of them. But he says, don't get led away by all that stuff. And then he says, it is good for the heart to be strengthened by grace. Understanding the grace and graciousness of God. And that's what strengthens us, God's grace. It's not food, he says, which have not benefited those devoted to them. He says, we have an altar from which those who serve the tent, talking about the tabernacle or the temple of God, have no right to eat. He says, our altar isn't here in Jerusalem. We have an altar God built in his city that we get to eat from because we're all priests who get to eat from that altar. And he says, for the bodies of those animals whose blood is brought into the holy places by the high priest as a sacrifice for sin are burned outside the camp. Now, this outside the camp is an important kind of imagery from the old law and how the scapegoat all the sins of the people were put upon the scapegoat, and that scapegoat was sent out on its own into the wilderness. How long do you think a goat by itself survived in the wilderness? I don't think most of them would survive that long, would they? I mean, goats are pretty stubborn, but, you know, the big cats and the lions out there are going to take them down. Not like they're, you know, they're impervious. Not quite a sheep, but they're, you know. But they were sent outside the camp. Now, that was symbolic. That was a foreshadowing of Jesus being sent outside of Jerusalem to be executed, to be hung on a cross outside the gates. He was sent outside the camp. Now, that's an important thing for us, because what's outside the camp? What's outside the city? Difficulty, trials, hardship. This is why many of the early Christians, by the way, were the only ones that took care of people, you know, in quarantine. You know, people who had, Christians were the only ones that would go into leper colonies and help them and feed them in the early, you know, centuries. In fact, the Romans, you know, typically if somebody got sick, certain kinds of sickness, they sent them away and they're like, just let them go out to die. Christians didn't do that, and they went out. And a lot of Christians died helping, caring for people who were sick. They went outside the camp into those places, and they did that. It had an effect, by the way, on the Roman people. They were kind of marveled in many ways at the Christians' faith and trust and ability to care for people even in the midst of that kind of difficulty. But he's urging us to go outside the camp. He says, so Jesus also suffered outside the gate in order to sanctify the people through his own blood. Therefore, let us go to him outside the camp and bear the reproach he endured. For here we have no lasting city. There's no place you can move that's going to be perfect for you. If you're a Christian and you want to follow Christ and you want to be with God, you know, a lot of times we think about moving to places, right? We're living in places, we kind of get, I really just hate it here. I want to move someplace. Let's find some other place. Great. There's no place like that in this world. They don't exist. Every place is a challenge. Every place is going to be a struggle to some degree. I mean, some places are worse than others at different times, but some places, you know, and then they kind of switch. But he's telling us, our city isn't here. We seek the city that is to come. Verse 15, through him, then let us continually offer up a sacrifice of praise to God. That is the fruit of lips that acknowledge his name. Do not neglect to do good and to share what you have, for such sacrifices are pleasing to God. And so that's what he's urging us to do. Essentially urging us, by the way, think about this. That he tells us to be strengthened by God's grace, to praise him, and to keep doing good and to share with people. And do it out in the midst of the trials and difficulties. We are not looking for the ease and the place that there's no discomfort and the place where everything's easy. That's not our place in this world. Our place isn't in the marbled places where everything is done for us. Our places are outside the camp to help the people who cannot help themselves, to help the people who are suffering and who are in need, whether it's emotionally or physically or spiritually. That's our purpose. And that's what we have to remember. And that's how all the people in Hebrews 11 that endured, because they kept looking for that city. They kept pressing on to that city. And that's our place as well, for us to press on to that city. So we're going to end here singing 483. And I appreciate everybody who could be here. For those who watching at home, I do hope you stay well. And if you are sick, I hope you recover quickly. And if you need things, please reach out to us. Let us know. But we're going to sing a song just to close out our time here this morning. But we thank you all for coming. And if you need anything, please reach out to us. Give us a call, text us, email us, anybody in our congregation, any of the elders. We'll do what we can if we're able. Let's go ahead and stand and sing.